Sean Morgan. I'm the host of the Sean Morgan Report on AMP News. I'm here with Dr. Kirk Elliott. And Kirk, I've been looking at the latest breaking news. I'm seeing a few things here and there. You know, the Putin summit in Africa, they're actually literally announcing they're trying to weaken the U.S. dollar. You didn't hear that rhetoric a couple of years ago, but that's what you're hearing now. What's on your mind, and what do you see looking ahead?
Well, you've got that. You've got the things that we've talked about in previous shows here about August 22nd, the BRICS nations meeting, you know, to basically probably back their currency with gold. Now, is it going to be like a dollar for dollar? I don't think so, right? But the latest speculation is it's probably going to be pegged at about 8 grams of gold per BRIC unit, which puts it right in line with what the Russian ruble did, right, at 5 grams per ruble. So people say, well, Kirk, that's not very much. It's like, or is it?
It's right? It's a better than nothing.
Well, A, it's better than nothing. But B, if they're going to back the currency of the BRICS nations with 8 grams per monetary unit for 73% of the world's population as part of the BRICS nations, like, oh my word, that's a lot of gold, right? I don't care how many.
Do you think that equals their known reserves, or do you think they might have more hidden?
It doesn't even matter if it's their reserves or not, because the peg is the peg, right? And always in any economy, you grow the currency base to grow the economy, right? So if it is a limited number, what does that mean for the price of gold? It just has to go up and up and up and up, right? So, but silver is outperforming that, which is why we've been allocating into silver, right? To take advantage of that growth and ultimately sell it and go into gold down the road, right? Because that gets a compounding of ounces kind of a principle, which is wealth. So you have that coming, but what's happening this week? So this week, three central banks are meeting that the Fed and the European central banks already did and raised rates, right? So they raised their rates. Now, Japan, this is an interesting one. Japan has been trying for the last 15 rate hike cycles. When the rest of the world has been raising rates, Japan did not, right? Because it's like, oh man, we've got to keep our economy stinks so bad here in Japan. We've got to stimulate things. We're not going to raise rates to do anything that might slow it down, because we just have to grow, 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 because we're sinking ship fast. So, but inflation is actually persisting so badly there. I mean, one of the only countries in the world where you have to have a multi-generational mortgage, because the prices in Tokyo are so high that you can't just have one 30-year mortgage. I think it's like 50 to 80 years, which is a multiple generation span. You have to have the kids sign off on the note too, right? It's like, so the things are out of control. So they're going to be raising rates as well. Now, I think what will happen is the next meeting in September, they're going to have to raise rates again. Then they'll probably go on pause, right? They're going to say, oh, we're winning this battle of inflation, so let's pause for a bit, right? But that's not the true case, because other things that are happening right now, right underneath our nose, are going to diminish demand for the dollar like nothing we've seen in history, right? So what are those things? Number one, Russia, Putin 2 days ago signed into law the Russian ruble digital currency, right? So this is their CBDC. And it's not like, okay, you know, you're 6 months, a year down the road, we're going to have this thing. It starts August 1st. It's like, okay. So you've got this march towards central bank digital currency and complete control, communist fascist takeover of bank accounts, right? So you've got that happening. You've got the IMF that said any country that owes another country a debt no longer has to pay for it in U.S. dollars. They can pay for it in renminbi. It's like, okay, this is wild, right? Renminbi, it's like, it's not even the yuan. You know, the Chinese currency, they have two currencies. They have an internal currency for if you're a Chinese citizen living in Shanghai and you're going to the grocery store or whatever, you're using the renminbi. The yuan is used for international settlements. So they have this dual currency approach. Well, why in the world would they change all international settlements between countries to the renminbi? Well, because they want to build up the BRICS nations' economies, right? So this is this all-out assault on the U.S. dollar and this march towards central bank digital currency, giving people the illusion of privacy, right? It's like, okay, we're going to get out of this paper dollar. We're going to get out of this Western-controlled financial system. But it's the opposite of privacy. It's not cryptocurrencies as we know it. It's not. This is the opposite of decentralized blockchain. This is ultimate control of everything, which is why Nigel Farage in England got cut off from his bank accounts. Nigel Farage.
Yeah, right? that was a big turnaround where they ended up apologizing for sending a 40-page cancellation letter. But that was good. That put it on the front page of,
exactly.
of the world to understand that your political beliefs, even if you're among the elite, is something that can get you canceled and debanked. But I want to ask you, Kirk, about the battle against inflation, or if this is even a real battle or a fake battle, with the Fed and Biden claiming that they care about inflation in the U.S. and want to stop it. We've seen a couple of encouraging numbers. I don't know if it's encouraging or discouraging, but I guess, you know, the housing recession is over, supposedly, because we finally, in the official data, saw that home sales rose a little bit. You know, we've got this dovish kind of rhetoric from the Fed, and it's making the stock market go up. They hiked in the EU central bank. They hiked rates. So everyone's pretending, or maybe they are really trying to stop inflation. But are they going to be successful? And what are they going to do once they give up this fight? Are they going to pivot? Are we going to head into more of a hyperinflationary because they're going to be stimulating an already inflationary environment?
Yeah. So the pivot is simply going to be a change in system, I believe. I think the pivot comes with central bank digital currency. I think things run their course. They're not winning the battle on inflation at all. They're not. So how can we tell? Simply go to the grocery store, right? Go to the grocery store, go to the gas station, say, are things cheaper than they were 30 days ago? They're not, right? So, but they're going to have all kinds of metrics, all kinds of analytics that say, oh no, we are winning this battle on inflation. No, we're not, because our wallets don't lie, right? They're not going to lie about that. But so they're going to pretend to take care of all of this stuff. But what tells me that they're not winning this battle of inflation is that now this week across the board, the Fed, the European Central Bank, and Japan are going to raise rates. You don't raise rates if you don't have inflation, right? Because that has the net effect of slowing things down. Here's their catch 22. An overheated economy, you know, where the prices are going up too much because people are spending and the economy can justify higher prices, that's a robust economy. Inflation always comes with a growing economy. So, but that's the false narrative that's actually being said right now. So the other reason inflation comes is because there is no growth in the economy and they're having to print money like there's no tomorrow to fund something that people should actually be funding with their spending. So we still have the same net result, inflation, but it's not because people are spending money, which to me is also being not exposed, but spoken about on the financial news networks like CNBC. It's like, look at this bear market rally in the stock market. This is amazing. It's like, is it? Are people spending money? Is the source of the bear market rally actually right. retail spending and companies being profitable and their earnings going
up? A good example of that was the headline that I read was dovish Fed and Meta earnings, you know, equaled the rally in the stock market. It's like, okay, what about the real economy? What about the real numbers of the real people in the world buying more things and having more jobs and creating more businesses and more prosperity? Had nothing to do with the conversation.
Nothing, because it's not part of the conversation, John. It's actually not there. I mean, I can walk outside of Denver here where our offices are, and probably one out of every four storefronts on the main street level has a for lease or for sale sign on it. If the economy were robust and people were spending, then those things would be gobbled up with retailers, with restaurants, with anything other than vacancy signs. And it's not like they're vacant and you can tell that they're renovating the inside for the next, you know, store owner to go in. No, they're just dormant. Right.
Yeah. There are all these mega trends of people working virtually. And of course we have AI coming also to take even more jobs. And so you wonder, all of this commercial real estate, is it ever coming back?
It will at some point, I hope, right? I mean, this is maybe my Pollyanna moment of the day, right? I hope, but what we don't know is the actual massive impact that AI is going to have, right? If AI does what you and I think it's going to do and what their creators of AI are espousing, is it's going to replace 20% of all global jobs and upwards of 67%, two-thirds of all jobs in the United States and Europe. That's the most recent numbers from about a month ago. It's like, that's a lot of jobs that aren't going to come back. What are you going to, where are they going to go? What are they going to do if this AI, and see, if you're Bill Gates, if you're Bezos, if you're any of these big, you know, monster company type leaders, you're going to say, man, I don't have to pay these computers. I don't have to provide benefits for it. If you're Jeff Bezos, it's like, okay, I'm not going to get another, you know, HR lawsuit, right? It's like, or whatever. But here's the net negative. None of these people have jobs. These people are going to go to the government for assistance, for welfare, for loss of wages, for something, right? Well, wait, there's no income tax revenue for the government because there's no jobs. Computers aren't being paid. They're not going to Best Buy and buying things and generating more sales tax revenue for the local municipalities, right? So where right. are the governments going to get all the money to pay for all of these welfare and entitlements? It's not going to be there.
Right. And it's funny because all of the AI people who did create this machine that takes jobs, they've known this from the beginning, and they've been advocating for universal basic income. They want to give people $1,000, $2,000, who knows how much money per month, to just subsist and just say, hey, you know what? The AI is going to take care of all the productivity now. You do whatever you want, sit on your couch, watch Netflix, spend your subsidized amount of money that we're giving you per month, and you spend it on your Coca-Cola and your McDonald's and all this stuff. So it's kind of, it's a weird plan for our future. But what do you think are the things that people can do now to anticipate before, because this is going to be a multi-year process to play out. What do you think people can do now to secure the privacy, you know, perhaps protect or even grow their nest egg, because do they really want it in the stock market right now?
Well, no, I mean, this is the great debate, right? So, you know, if you watch any of the financial news, it's like, ooh, invest in AI. There's a lot of good AI stocks out there, Microsoft, some of these other companies, NVIDIA, things that are, you know, on the cutting edge of artificial intelligence. It's like, okay, maybe people could make a profit from something like that. But come October, when there's always a October surprise on the stock market, I believe this is the reason why there's a bear market rally right now, right? Because they're going to prop it up. It's not from you and I spending money or anybody else. It's from stimulus money. Because what happens in October? Why is there always an October surprise? Well, because of the fiscal year for the federal government ends and all the numbers come out, right? And it's like, man, we can't afford any of this stuff. Well, what we're seeing, the most recent numbers, the June numbers came out, like it's July. So the June numbers came out. Unbelievable. I've never seen anything like it. The deficit grew by $690 billion in June alone. So what's seven? That's basically 700 billion times 12. We're on pace for an $8 trillion debt increase year. We have 32 trillion now that took 250 years to accumulate. You're telling me that we're on pace to add 8 trillion in 1 year? So I think the October surprise this year is going to be way worse, because we've never seen these kind of debt explosion numbers ever.
And I really like what you said, Kirk, about the pivot is a new system, because it used to be the pivot is we cut rates, something simple like a policy change. But this is going to have to be some other kind of solution. Of course, we've had TARP funds and different bailouts and stuff in the past for big crises. But I think you're right that the problem is going to be so big that the only thing they can do, they can't do a Band-Aid. They're going to rush in with the, hey, look at this system that we already had prepared to deal with this. And I wonder even if the World Bank and the SDRs might even play a role in this, because, someone's going to have to bail something out. So it is hard to figure out how it's going to play out. But nevertheless, whether it's going to play out one way or another, there's one way that's been, tried and true for thousands of years, and the BRICS already know that. So are you thinking this could be 100% gold-backed, or it could be a commodity or a basket, and gold will play a part in that? There has to be a reason they've been buying all that gold.
I think it's going to be gold-backed. That's the easiest thing, because, you can't use really silver to back a currency. It's too inexpensive, right? And there's just simply not enough. I mean, at current drawdown rates, we're set, according to Andy Shechtman, expected to run out within 5 months for manufacturing amount of silver. It's like, well, boy, you can't use that to back a currency, right? But you could use gold. I think the BRICS nations are using kind of a quasi approach. I think they're going to use gold. This is why they're buying it by the hundreds and thousands of tons. But by gobbling up these other nations, these oil producing nations like Saudi Arabia and so forth into the BRICS nations, it's also going to be quasi oil backed, right? I think
right.
So you could have both running parallel, but what
if that you means, have Iran, Iraq, Venezuela, Russia, all these oil countries that they might want to have that part of the basket.
Yeah. And I think it'll be multi commodity basket with gold playing the large part of it. There's no other rational reason why they would be buying gold by the hundreds or thousands of tons and accelerating that growth rate unless they were needing it to back a currency.
Yeah, it does make sense to me. So what can people do now? We've got a link in the description below that they can get a free consultation with you. What would that look like if they do that? What kind of conversation will they have with your team?
So, it's an awesome conversation, right? It's like, wait, what was it that Sean and Kirk were talking about that caused you to want to reach out, right? And then just tell my team, what it was. Do you have an IRA? Do you have a non-IRA? What do you want to protect? And then we'll get you on the calendar with one of our advisors who will dig in deeper and then map out the strategy for success moving forward. And we'll handle all the asset transfer teams, the crossing of the T's, the dotting of the I's, the moving funds, so you can allocate into the strength of precious metals. What does it take for you? A simple phone call and 15-minute application, right? And then my team does the rest. But that's what it is. It's basically a conversation. What are your dreams? What are your aspirations? What are your goals? What are your fears? What can we help you with? And then we map it out. And then you say, yep, that looks great. Or nope, not interested. Either one.
It's not a pressure. It's not a high pressure sales call. Is that what you're saying?
It's exactly what I'm saying. I mean, you could say, Kirk, this sounds awesome. I want to allocate just like you. Or you could say, take a long walk off a short pier. I'm not doing anything. I'm staying in my Apple shares, right? It's like, whatever. Our goal is to help you be a wise steward with what you've been given. The only way to do that is with knowledge, right? So we'll give you everything that we know to help you make that decision. But then the decision is going to come from trust. Trust only comes through communication, right? So this is why we're very relationship oriented. And I don't care if it's a marriage or a friendship or a business relationship. you can't have trust without communication. You can't have communication without the first call, right? So that's our goal, is to hold your hand through this fragile economy moving forward, always let you know when it's time to buy, sell, reallocate, do whatever.
That's what I like. I like, this is not just a one-time transaction. This is something where if it's time to reallocate from silver to gold, you're going to call them up and help them through that process too.
100%. Yeah.
And when they want to sell the metals back to you, you always accept it and you won't charge a commission. Is that how it works?
Correct. Because it's a global market. We're not dealing
with a lot of the competitors out there will not be able to do that.
Well, they can't, because they have to make a market for the stuff that they're selling. When you deal with rare coins or semi-rare coins, it's not a global commodity. It's something you have to make a market for. This is why we do 100-ounce bars of silver, 10-ounce bars of silver bullion. It's a 45-second phone call to the depository because it's a global commodity. We lock it in. It's done. It's always 100% liquid.
Right. Yeah, I know so many stories of people who got burned on the numismatics, and it's just safer, more liquid to do the bullion. So I'm really glad that you guys do it that way. That's the way I'm going to do it, because I've made the same mistake with the high premiums of the numismatics in the past. So we'll learn from our mistakes. Thank you, Kirk, so much for your time. We're looking forward to your next update next week.
It's my pleasure. We'll talk soon.
God bless.